When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's episode of the Mind Sculptors podcast is sponsored by TCG Player, your source for all your trading card game needs. Use our link in the description the next time you get your cards to help support the show. Today's episode is also made possible by our Patreon subscribers. If you want to support the show directly, head over to patreon.com/themindsculptors and you can become part of the Sculpty family today. Or if you don't want to do any of that, leave a like and comment on YouTube or a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts as an offering to Algorithm Jesus.
So I know that people in our comment section have been hilariously enjoying the Lime Scooter Wars of 2024. The Great Lime Scooter Wars. So I want to give a heads up to everybody. Welcome to the Mind Sculptors podcast. Actually, it's the Lime Scooter War podcast. I'm Callahan.
We're the Lime Sculptors.
We're the Lime Sculptors. I have a story here that dovetails into the Lime Scooter debacle a little
bit.
This
is good. Yeah,
this is great. So earlier this week, Forbes put out an article where they looked at the top 50 cities in America and ranked them on how across a bunch of different metrics. From worst to best on how bad their drivers were. And when you came and visited Louisville back, you can attest, the traffic here was weird, weirdly bad for it. It's a big city, but it's not big city, right? Where it should every exit, it's backed up for miles for some reason. So I just assumed, maybe I'm just used to the smaller cities or something. Yep. Turns out, no. Louisville ranked seventh in this as the seventh worst drivers in America. tragically bad. They're behind Dallas, Kansas City, Tucson, Detroit, Memphis, and Albuquerque. Albuquerque has the worst drivers in America. But the reason I bring this up is I am willing to, I think that this transcends motor vehicles, right, that are on the road. I think this now extends, and I'm willing to say this extends into the Lime Scooter drivers of Louisville, because for those of you who have been paying attention, there's this whole Lime Scooter thing that's been going on with me. You can listen to our other podcasts and get a heads up on exactly how annoying it has been. They're no longer in my neighborhood, thankfully. However, yesterday morning, I'm taking Cassidy to work. She got up late. I'm dropping her off. And some dude just riding a Lime Scooter. I don't know how, but he almost rode headfirst into my vehicle while I was driving. Just turning into a hospital. And so I'm convinced that your little call for action that you had last week is that this is actually a listener of the show who tracked me down.
Yeah,
and there's some
assassin scooters coming around.
Assassin scooters.
Yeah, thank you for the scooter assassin cult that
I hired. It was funny because I was telling you yesterday, we were talking about it a little bit because we got some comments on the podcast, I was like, oh, people seem to really like the bit. People think it's funny. And I was like, I was ready to put it to bed, but I woke up this morning. I took Cassidy to work. I almost ran some motherfucker over because he almost ran into my goddamn car head first. He was going the wrong way on the road, turns weird into the middle of the road somehow, like out of nowhere to like cross the street. And I'm just like, I'm driving. What the fuck? I outlaw this shit, man. It's absolute pandemonium. Pandemonium in the streets of Louisville, I tell you. I tell you what, when Louisville drivers can figure out how to drive fucking cars, you guys can have scooters back, I guess.
When you guys learn to use it right, I'll let you have it back.
It's fine. I move away from here in a few months anyway. So I only have like a few more months of this bullshit to deal with.
All right.
How are you doing, my friend?
Scooter assassins, your windows are closing.
Your window is closing. If you're looking for Buicks in Louisville, Kentucky, your window is rapidly closing.
With the following license plate. No, okay.
So yeah, how was your weekend, friend? You played in a tournament over the weekend. How'd that go?
It was a local five rounder. So apparently there's a like store version of 95 gaming, which I was not aware of, but like 95 is like one of those stores that like
you see them like every event.
But it was super sick. We'd heard about it through the grapevine, the Philly Discord. And I was like, all right, Delaware is not that far away. So we like sort of pooted on by.
It's like 45 about, minutes or so.
Yeah. 45, 50 minute drive. Lou and I both showed up as a five round CEDH tournament. I ended the Swiss in first place, but unfortunately lost in the top 16 to our opponent having like the exact sequence of spells that we did not have interaction for. Like us as a responsive team had Fierce Guardianship, Attain Impact, Red Elemental Blast, and Abrupt Decay, and like one other thing.
They were able to get through all of that?
Yeah, so they sequenced Ranger Captain, to which I had to flip over through Matanda Pact, hard cast a Mind Break Trap, because I couldn't dig for silence anymore, because I was like already losing win cons for the Tainted Pact just to get to my Mind Break Trap. And they specifically had Flusterstorm as the backup, which the Red Blast didn't do anything about, the Fierce Guardianship didn't do anything about, and the Abrupt Decay didn't help at all. And they had exactly
enough Flusterstorm mana. Answers a lot of stuff.
Yeah, they had exactly enough mana, too, to be able to Demonic Tutor, Thassa's Consult, with Italian out, ending at one life. Yeah. It was, like, crazy. For sure. Yeah, that was one of those times where I was like, you know, sometimes I'm not meant to win a game, I think, maybe.
Yeah. No, I your round five opponent in your thing you did at, what was it, Galaxy Con or whatever?
Yeah, Clash for Cash. I keep saying that.
Yeah, backwards. Yeah. The Borgbrygmos and Fibblethip player who just had it on turn two, and you're just like, I don't know what to do about that, right? Like, it just, that happens sometimes, right?
No tutor food chain win turn two? Yeah, no big deal.
With, like, the god opener for, like, any deck.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just get the nuts.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just get the nuts.
That's okay.
So today we're going to be talking about, I want to see exactly how he worded it, how to play against irresponsible players. This is a question submitted by a patron of the podcast, Just Ice, who longtime patron of the podcast, very thankful for them. And they asked this question in our Discord, how to play against irresponsible players and how to use them to your advantage. And so this actually seemed like an interesting little topic to talk on and kind of elaborate on. And it's kind of interesting because we've talked about a lot of get ready for Survivor analogies galore, because this is the episode for that.
For sure.
But yeah, so like when we're talking about irresponsible players, I think it's kind of interesting, like important to define what that means. And so I guess to me, irresponsible players are like players who either like I don't want to say are making dumb decisions, right? Because there's like a difference between being irresponsible and just like not thinking about like, or not caring about like the consequences, right? I think it's more accurate to say is really just the not caring about the consequences of doing X, Y, and Z. They're more concerned about the short term gain, right?
Right. And I want to sort of separate this. Sorry, one sec. Didn't want that pick up in the audio. It's just water.
That's going to cut great.
Now they're going to be like, oh, he's not eating you now. He just pours his water in a cup. Fucking nerd. But I want to separate this sort of narrative between like I don't want to be describing players as being like objectively stupid, right? Like I feel like that's not a helpful part of this conversation, right? Yeah. When people are making poor decisions, right, there can be a number of different reasons behind it. Occasionally they miss a line. Occasionally they're just like, they're just not on it. And that's fine, right? But the intent of this episode is not to be like, yeah, haha, people around you are so dumb and you're so smart, haha, flex on them, right? Like, because I feel like that's a very easy way that this could come off in a very negative space, right? But there are, for any number of reasons, people who are not going to be aligned with the way that you are mentally approaching the game, right? Whether it's they are playing hyper aggressively when they don't need to be, right? You can see illustrations of this all the time. I mean, I literally, in that video that Cal is referencing, I have a player who I blatantly like walked them through the exact like consequences of what would happen.
You're such a good sport, because if that would have happened to me, I would have been like, man, I must be fucking Nostradamus, man.
You're right. So like, I don't get me wrong. I definitely like packed up my cards very quietly and walked away because I was pissed off. Right. But like, sometimes you will walk someone through a line being like, this is exactly what's going to happen if you do this thing. And then they do it and it's exactly what happens and you lose the game according to it. Right. And that's a part of CEDH, right? You are playing a multiplayer game and sometimes you will, you know, it's the stupid Batman quote, the unstoppable force means an immovable object, right? Like sometimes you hit that and that's fine. It happens, and it's part of the game, and it's why variance matters, and it's why people refer to top 16s more than tournament wins and all of that stuff, right? Because at the end of the day, like, when it comes to the variance of the format, it's who's consistently doing better, blah, 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 blah. Anyways, that's a completely separate conversation that we've had 1,000 times on this channel. But, like, point being, we are trying to narrow down those times in which that happens and where we can kind of be like, whoop, and like jump over the obstacle in our way. Right. Sorry for the audio only podcast. The idea being, you know, instead of running headfirst into a wall, we are stepping sideways and letting the wall aggressively fly past us. And
as walls that thing walls do fly.
But the idea is like, how do we circumvent those opportunities or lack thereof, right? When these situations come about to us. I don't know if you want to take this nap start by like, do you want to provide some examples, right? Because I have a couple that have like,
I definitely could do that. I think for me, a good example of this. You know what? You go first. I'm actually like sitting here and I'm like trying to think of one off the dome. Yeah. And I actually can't think of one off the dome right now. Right, so many. I believe you. You play in significantly more tournaments than I do.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So like this is one of my favorite examples because it was one that I picked up on pretty early and did play around. Right. So, for example, player A goes and they're on Najila. Right. Mm hmm. very clearly the NBC Najila, right, on ad nauseum, all that stuff, right? I'm playing Winota at the time, and I go to combat, and they're doing like the big twitchy eyes, right? Like they're clearly like ready to blow some stuff up, right? And I'm at the point where I'm not a threat at the table. I'm not doing anything. I'm just like developing my board barely at this point, right?
Right.
And Najila's like, don't you be sending something my way. Like, I'm going to blow up your stuff. And I was like, okay, dog. Like, right. So at the time, right. For me, there was other decks at the table. They were not ad nauseum focused decks. Right. But I still choose to go along with Rootin' Tootin' Cowboy over here. And it's because specifically, right. I know that this interaction that I can use later in the game, right? Right? Now, the lesson to not take from this interaction is, well, I can threaten everybody to blow up their stuff at wrong times and get away with this. No. that's not how this works. They eventually did get attacked a bunch and made themselves sort of the heel of the table, right? Because everybody was like, they're sort of just firing off whatever guns they have, right? And like trying for pretty poor win attempts, right? But while that was all happening, I was getting my attacks for free.
Right.
On other players, right? And getting one out of flips. And there was points where I did have to attack them, right? But it was after they had already sort of, you know, gone
then ran out of ammo.
Yeah, yeah. They did reload their six shooter, right? So and eventually I was able to take that game down, right? But that was because I was like, okay, this person's clearly not thinking with the mindset that I would approach a tournament with, or, you know, most of my other opponents would approach a tournament with, yeah. Right? They're clearly responding from a very emotional place, right? So, therefore, let me just be like, pat, pat, all right, buddy, do something else, right? Like, mm-hmm. And, you know, later in the game, they would listen to me more and stuff like that because, like, they were just doing the thing, right? Like, they clearly had a very specific way that they wanted to approach the game, right? And in that circumstance, it's very easy to identify it, right? Like, identify that this is how they wanted to play things. I'm like, sure, I don't agree with it. I would never play like that. Probably gonna lose more games by playing like that, but let me at least err on the side of partnership while I'm here, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think like one of the examples that I can think of like right off the top of my head is specifically playing at I believe this was a draw at an event where I was playing against an Urza player. There was a Rog side deck. I forget what the other player at the table was. This was like almost a year ago. And we had this Urza player who was kind of like end step activating Urza like it was a Thrasios, which okay. Is heads up. Don't do that. Can't cast those things at instant speed unless they're instants. He's exiling like important stacks pieces. I'm seeing static orb, winter orb, curse totem, all that, or not curse totem, but like all that shit, right? The good pieces in Urza just go away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, me and the Rog side player are just kind of sitting there with, I think it was a Timna Krom deck was the fourth deck at the table going, oh shit, this Timna Krom player who is like just going unmolested in this game is about to win the game because all the stuff that was going to stop them is just gone. Yep. Because we've just exiled it for no particular reason. And so player goes to activate Urza, and we say, before you do that, let's like, we have a response to do a thing before you do that so that we can maybe like think about this a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And so we just like talked through what was happening and why, like, hey, this player is about to go through that thing. And they ended up at activating Urza anyway. But what ends up happening, I didn't win this thing.
The wrong side stories end up with, and they chose not to listen, but it's fine.
They chose not to listen, and that was fine. And I think that's important because it's like, you, when there are irresponsible players at the table, I think voicing like, hey, I think that we should probably not do this is like important. And if they choose not to go with like that, you know, especially if what you're advocating for is a responsible play, then you have to figure out like, again, okay, well, I have to figure out how to play around that. Right. Yeah. And that was effectively what the Rog'Sai player ended up doing in that table. Like I was just like, I think there was like a board wipe at one point that like sent me back to the fucking like the like Stone Age.
Yeah.
And the Rog'Sai player ends up like finding this one window where they were able to, on top of this activation, just kind of like go off.
Yeah.
And like it's finding those things where when other people are playing irresponsibly like that or misplaying, using that to your advantage because of how it's disrupted your opponents, where like if that player hadn't been doing that, we conceivably could have stopped both the Timnacron player and the Rog'Sai player. Right. And the game could have gone on. And that's just kind of like how that goes sometimes. But, you know, that it, like and the thing that I want to make sure that I like, because I have stories of people who like don't know how cards work. Right. And that has impacted games. But like, I want to make sure to like clarify that that is not what we're talking about. Right. Like if somebody is newer to the format and is misplaying, I'm a lot more like generous with that, if that makes sense, like a lot more understanding of that like misstep than I am for somebody who walks in and is very confidently misplaying. Right.
Yeah.
But that's what comes to the mind off the top of my head. Right.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. And there's like so many different scenarios I can come up with. Right. Like there are dozens. I mean, I can talk about the person who attempted to give a player who had mulliganed to four earlier in the game and who was clearly going to win the game a Wishclaw Talisman because, quote, well, you mulled to four, so I felt bad. You know what I mean? Like, I can go into stories like that any day of the week, right?
Guys, don't do that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I was not a big fan of them being like, well, you deserve it, bud. but there's so many scenarios like this that come up, right? And it's adapting to them is the important thing, right? So one thing that's you can kind of tell that we've started off with like that initial level of understanding is that question of like, why are they doing this thing? Right. So if you heard the Manigula story, right, they wanted to play a very rattlesnake esque game, right? Where it's like, if you come at me, the snake's going to bite.
Right. Yeah.
My advantage in this game is convincing you that I'll get you. Right. That's the technique that they chose. Right. So, my first step was understanding where they're coming from, right? Rattlesnaking. Sure. That's their approach to the game. I accept. then diagnosing, right? Like, how do I best, not piss off the rattlesnake? Okay, well, play the game in a slightly suboptimal way so that in the end, it is optimal, right?
Right.
And then moving forward, right? So the game you just talked about too, right? Like there's a understanding of that. The question of, well, why are you activating this on the end step?
Right.
Okay.
Like, what are we hoping to hit off of this?
Right. What are you hoping to do? What are you hoping to hit? What are you hoping to achieve? Right.
Right.
And little pieces like that can help to forward just the group as a whole, right? Like the understanding of the situation that you are in, right? And from there, it gets a little bit more nuanced and complicated, right? Like that's the thing for sure.
Yeah.
But
and I think this is why I often compare the game to like Survivor, right? Because I think this is like because this is something that a lot of people complain about with the format, right? Where it's just like, oh man, sometimes you'll just lose because somebody made a bad play. And it's like, I think the trick of being good at Commander consistently is, well, it's not even, I think it's, I know the trick because you are just a walking example of this, is learning how to navigate the social side of the game, because if you can't, like this is the part about it that I think is very important to like dissect, is like it is a social format. There are four people talking. You can't take that out of the game, right? You can try as much as you want. It's never going away, and you have to be able to figure out how to navigate those interpersonal situations in a way that is effective and benefits you. And that is something that I don't think a lot of people are like mentally ready for going into tournaments, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think there's honestly been like so much negative PR about politicking lately that like it's just sort of becoming this like trigger phrase for people to pop off about it and like not really gain any understanding about it, right?
Yeah.
unfortunately. And there's different levels to it. There's people who, once again, in every department, in every zone, in every reality, there's people who take things to extremes, right?
Right.
And that part of the conversation has sort of muddled a lot of this understanding, right? But like the politicking of, you know, like there is a difference between politicking in the sense where there is a person who is playing who is just always on, right? Always talking, always chatting the whole time. I've definitely seen people like that. I can think of many examples like that. I will omit names from my memories or from the podcast. But there's also parts of it that are much more subtle, much more nuanced, right? Understanding people. Listening in a situation like that where the Najeela player one I discussed, I'm not sitting there talking for 20 minutes to this Najeela player being like, actually, the line you're going for is rather suboptimal and you should rather not be using your like, I'm not doing that to a person, right? In that situation, I'm shutting up and I'm attacking the other people and dealing with it, right? And adjusting accordingly, right? These things are a part of the game, right? So there's so much socially that is relevant, right? Without it even being this politicking, right? Like it is, it is the social aspect of the game is everything for CEDH. You know, I shouldn't say everything, right? There's obviously being
able to it can grease the wheels, right? Like, I mean, I think that like, I think you talk about like, when you, mention players who talk a lot, you know, I talk a lot, not in the, like, I'm trying to convince you of something, but like the whole game, like I'm usually just like cracking jokes, having fun, like, like being really who I am as a person, honestly. But like in part of that is it greases the wheels a little bit and makes people feel a little bit more comfortable. And like sometimes when people walk in to a Commander tournament, they are really on edge. They're really like nervous and they want to do well. And sometimes walking in and just being like a ball of like, hey, I'm here to have fun. We're going to have fun and blah, blah, blah. And like, I'm going to crack jokes and stuff and I'm going to take it seriously the whole time. Greases that wheel and kind of pulls people back off of that. And so like that can also help people play less irresponsibly because people aren't on that edge the whole time. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I literally have said this to several clients at this point now where it's like, no matter what your personality is, being yourself is okay.
Yeah.
And being yourself is rewarded in this format because if you are putting on an act while also trying to execute your plays efficiently and like doing all that stuff, it's exhausting. No one wants that, right? Yeah. Like if you are someone who is a little bit quiet, that's okay. Just talk at the right moments, right? Say say one or two things at the right time. If you're someone who is like Cal and I, right, a little bit silly, a little bit jokey, right? Then be that part of yourself as long as you're not being, you know, obnoxious about it. I've definitely run into those people as well.
Yeah.
and just play the game, right? Like it's at the end of the day, right? This is a format that rewards you for being yourself, being being a normal person, right? And there are going to be people who that does not grease, right? There are going to be people who are like, how dare you make jokes in my environment, right? And
yeah, there are some people who take it like a bit too seriously.
That's I mean, one thing that's an opinion thing, right? But like,
Sure.
For our interpretation, right? Like that that would be it. You know, once again, a lot of this episode is like, you are not going to be able to follow everyone's. Like, I mean, this is a very psychological episode, right? Like, and I will throw that out there a lot. And this is once again very deterministic of the social aspect of the game. You are not going to mentally link up with everybody. There are going to be people who you play against who are going to have completely different thought patterns than you. And it's not just about like, I'm playing objectively bad because I'm new, right? That's different. This is people who are like, this is how I want to approach the game, or this is how my brain says I must approach the game. And how do you adapt to that, right? I've played with people who are like, I don't engage in politics. And it's like, so you don't speak to the table. No conversation about this is a problem. You're not going to talk about that. And they're like, yeah, not at all. I'm like, cool. So there is an empty seat over here that occasionally will cast spells. Got it. you know what I mean? Like it's and but that's okay, right? Like it's not like I would not take that strategy. I think you leave a lot of percentage points on the table by adapting that strategy. But the point of this podcast is not to shame that, right?
Right.
It is more so to say, like, how do you handle when people want to approach the game that way, right? Right. And you know, once again, so let's take that example, right? Because I have run into that person, you know, not engaging in politics, being like, hey, you're aware that that's a threat at the table? Great, thanks. Pass turn. You know what I mean? Literally, simple as a baseline of a thing, right? Being like, that is one half of a combo. We're on the same page about that? Great.
Yeah.
No politics here.
That's pointing that out. And that's like one of the things where I'll do is somebody will play like my way of dealing with that. Right. Because like a lot of like me is I get that I am a big personality. Right. And I have like I am, you know, everything's big and small. There's no like in between. Right.
Subtlety is not in your nature. No.
Yeah. Subtlety is like I do know how to be subtle, but it's just like not part of the bravado, the whatever. I mean, it's not the right word, whatever.
But I take issue with your statement that you know how to be subtle.
yeah. But like, you know, I've had play games and I think this is, I want to say it was at Cincinnati where, no, it was at Columbus because that was the one that had all the Atali decks at it where, somebody was playing, I want to say it was like Crick or whatever and lays down like a Bolas of Citadel. With it, just like a virgin Bolas of Citadel, nothing else, like just that. And I sit there and I'm like there's one other person at the table who's very quiet, didn't really like engage with conversation. And I just look at everybody and I'm like, woof, that's not good. Mm-hmm. And everybody engaged with that, right? Where it's like, you don't even need to talk to people in a, like have a conversation. You can just comment on, woof, you know what I mean? Just like, yikes, just stuff like that even is enough to convey the message to get people to get their like ears perked up in the right direction. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you know, I don't want to like move away too far from like the central topic, right? Of the, you know, how to deal with these players playing on a different like responsibility or whatever. Yeah. One of the things I like to think about is like really focusing on that question aspect, right? Like why? You know, mm-hmm. and I've had this happen, right? So, for example, this is a good one that I've noticed a lot of people who play a decent amount of the format have moved towards, right? Someone mm-hmm. goes for a suboptimal attack, right? They attack a player on, let's say, Dawnwaker, as opposed to a player who's on blue farm, right? You know, you want to hit the agnostic is the point of my central thesis here, right?
Yeah.
So, in that situation, right, being like, the difference between... oh, why are you attacking me? Attack somewhere different, right? And the difference between that and, okay, I will understand that you're attacking me right now. For future attacks, for the next up combats, their life total is much more of a resource than mine, just so you know. Move on, right? Little things like that, right? People who want to attack where they want to attack, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, I've also been in pods where, you know, I've had people focus me down because I have a reputation, right? Which mm-hmm. is like, you know, there's some people who are going to be like, yeah, they should, right? Sure, at the cost of your own game. Don't know if I agree with that, right? Like, there are things like
generally
that.
Generally, when that happens, the person who's focusing you down is not the person who's winning.
Right. It's like, yes, you can guarantee that I do not win 100%.
Good job.
Are you going to win? Right. Like, that's the question, right? If you can guarantee I don't win and you win, all the power to you, right? But that's not usually the conversation we're having specifically, right? And a lot of the times the question does become why, right? Like genuinely the question of why is so important to this conversation and to ask it in a respectful way, right? Like I can't stress that enough with this part of it. It's like asking
there's such a gulf between, well, why are you doing that? And it's just mm-hmm. like, what are we trying to do right now? Or not even that. Like I just like, what are we, what's the concern you have right now on my board?
Right.
You know, like even just that, where like just the tone and like, this is coming from somebody who like frequently has tonal problems, right? Mm-hmm. But like, you know, even just that subtle difference of even like right there, you could still hear that I was just like, the fuck? But there's a big difference between the fuck and so what are we trying to do right now? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. And it genuinely, like, I think this is just an underused skill in general. This is asking questions, like genuinely mm-hmm. asking questions at the right times. You know, why is this happening? What is the thing on the stack? What are you hoping to achieve with that tutor right now? You know, little things like that are such helpful tools, right, in the tool belt. And they say the information gleaned from a question as simple as why can inform an entire game plan, right? And sometimes you're going to get a stonewall back, right? And that's okay. Mm-hmm. You still ask the question at the right time. You know, worst case scenario, someone goes, I hate questions and I will make sure to find you in the parking lot afterwards and break your knees. Right. Like, and that's, you know,
if that happens, call the TO.
Yeah. Yeah. If that happens, maybe, you know, luckily judges are there for that reason. The TOs for sure. Right. But realistically, what's going to happen is the worst case scenario in game is them going to be like, I'm not going to answer that. Okay, cool. That tells me a lot too, right? That tells mm-hmm. me that they're probably up to something a little shifty, right? Mm-hmm. And shifty in a playful sense, not shifty in like they're stacking their deck, right? Like, shifty in game, right? 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 Like,
they're not playing Liberator, okay?
Yeah. Listen, they dropped their hand and they just happened to pick up the dockside on the ground. My favorite meme of the past 6 months for sure.
Oh my goodness.
But you know what I mean? So just asking these questions can be super helpful to understanding where they're coming from, right? Because like that's the thing, it's identifying that part of it, right? Mm-hmm. And then diagnosing it appropriately, right? And doing your best to adapt, right? That is I have beaten to death in the past 24 hours mm-hmm. is the word adapt, right? Because that is CEDH. It's all adaptation, right? Because it is a format full of variables. Variance is a huge part of the format, and literally no one is denying that, right? But where you lose people and where a lot of the sort of negative narrative around the format comes from is people going, well, yeah, it's full of variables. There's no way to conquer that. And I think there are myself and a number of other very prominent players like Jorman and Freedom Waffle and Wounded Satellite and dozens of others can also prove that that's not true, right? Like you yeah. can get a grasp of it. And things are not out of your control, right? So it is literally, the format is all about variance management. Mm-hmm. Most of your skill in this format is managing variables. People who play Rog'Sai, you know what they're doing? They're managing variables because they say, I'm going to limit the amount of variables because I'm going to try and end the game in two turns. There's yep. so many less variables in that circumstance. People who play hard stacks, people like Mono White Guy Charles, right? Like he would play such oppressive stacks pieces because he said, I'm going to limit the amount of actions and things my opponents can do to disrupt what I'm doing, right?
Yep.
Eliminating variables. It's all about variable elimination.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. And that's like one of the things where I think the social part of the game is like very mm-hmm. important to underscore with that, right? Because it's mm-hmm. I don't know how to describe the social part in a way that doesn't sound like it's like you're trying to take advantage of people, right? But it's just like, I mean, a lot of it is just trying to, like, you know, when we talk about how there are, you know, irresponsible players at the table, sometimes the way of dealing with that is talking to the other two players at the table, right? Yep. And a lot of times the other players at the table will see one person who's being super irresponsible and be like, oof, you know what I mean? Like a lot mm-hmm. of times people are on the same page with you.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, you know, when someone makes a butt of themselves, they tend to not exactly win the favor of the other players at the table, too. Right.
Like they don't win hearts and minds.
Yeah. Yeah. they do not win a million hearts. That is a Survivor reference for anyone. Yeah.
If you're watching this current season of Survivor, you'll get a kick out of that joke.
Yeah. But yeah, honestly, and so let's talk about that Survivor analogy, right?
Yeah.
Because like, you know, Survivor does have that like mechanical part of it, right? In the same way that, you know, we have the mechanical part of Magic, right? Whereas like strong people tend to do well at the game where they do physical challenges and mental challenges all the time.
And need to survive on limited resources.
Yeah, you need to survive on an island, right? Fun fact, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the allegory is right there, right? But you also, you know, have situations where you get stuck in the wrong Survivor tribe with somebody, right? Like in the same thing with people in your pod, right? You get aligned with people in a bad situation, right? Or you just get a bad break. You draw the wrong cards, et cetera, et cetera. The analogy goes deeper. Point being, right, you will see people in Survivor go to insane extremes, right? I mean, they will lie their freaking teeth off, right? And, and this is always the fascinating thing, right? There was, I think, this comes around, I promise. It's a Magic. It's about Magic. Yeah. But one of the most, like, I think, famous wins of all time was Tony, who is great Survivor player. Lied his entire fucking ass off to win his first season, fully swearing on his family, swearing on, you know, his dead father, all that stuff, straight lied about it. In the finale, was asked about it, said, yeah, I do it every time, right? The next time he showed up on, oh, sorry, spoilers also.
He won his season.
He showed up on Survivor, he lost in week one. They kicked him off immediately because they were like, oh, he's up to the same shit. You know what I mean?
He was the first person to go. Everybody was immediately like, nope.
Yeah. We were like, hey, dude, we all saw your season. No thanks. Right.
Fun fact about Survivor players. They're also Survivor fans.
Yeah. Like this is right. And this is why the metaphor gets a little bit deeper, right? Because when you look at Survivor compared to CEDH, it's compared to the one tournament, right? Like an entire game of Survivor is one tournament in CEDH, right?
Right.
As opposed to when you look at people who come back from multiple seasons, now it starts to have that analogy, that comparison, right? Mm-hmm. So people who make a full butt of themselves in the social game, like Tony did, right? Got him that first win. Absolutely. Right. We've seen people who do that, who get a win by like fully lying out.
And then you see like players like Shuri, who just very good at not being the center of attention, very good at like getting everybody's like trust. On the island, like, is very good at just like being on everybody's radar, but not in a way that is so on their radar that like they're trying to get rid of you.
Right. And so, you know, there's so much in that, right? And and that sorts, you know, there are people who are going to show up, right? And they're going to have that very short mentality of like, this is my sprint. It's not a marathon for me, right? Mm-hmm. And those people are going to have to adapt to as well, right? Mm-hmm. People who are going to be doing anything to get those wins, right? Inversely, there are times when you're going to deal with people who care just a little bit less. You know, the person who passes the wish claw, like I mentioned earlier. I had someone at one of the Eminence Platinum events straight up say, I went for a line because I was kind of tired when three of us were on winning ins. for sure. Right. And they were like, yeah, I was probably going to drop anyways. And we're like, why are you still playing the winning ins lot? Right. So like there's stuff you're gonna have to deal with. Right. And like that was a situation I can tell you for a fact. I was unaware of this factor ahead of time. Right. I guess maybe I didn't ask enough, but we lost because of it. Right. So like, I can't stress enough through this that there is no golden solution. Right. What this episode can help with is making sure that the ones you can win over, the situations in which you can ask the right questions at the right times, in which you can dissuade what you would consider suboptimal decisions. Mm-hmm. Those are the things you need to fight for. And sometimes you're not going to get there. Sometimes and people rather play that way, right?
And there are times where, and I think a really good example is like in that finals match from your, Clash for Cash event, where it was like they had to give you a sissy tutor. It's not a great position to be in, right?
Yeah.
But they had to give that to you because if they don't, we're losing right now. And like, that's one of the things that I think is very like important, where a lot of people will just like, oh, well, you never give Sosei a tutor. And I know I joke on this podcast a lot about, you know, like never giving Sosei the tutor, but like, you have to be able to recognize dead now and dead maybe later. I think you made a good comment when you were like breaking down in that video about like, you know, I will always want to play, try to make the game go as long as I can. Right. And I think like that is something that a lot of people need to like understand is like a good way of increasing your chances of winning, because the more a game goes on, the more opportunities you're going to have to win.
Yeah. So to be clear, like situations where you demonic consultation for a counterspell to answer something, right? And you have 10 cards left in your library, you have no actual win cons, and you're playing for the draw, right? I play that game. I cast the counterspell, I let it happen, right? You know, if someone proposes a draw at that point, then maybe I'm open to that conversation, right? But like, to me, well, I mean, because the draw is the goal at that point anyways, right? So that's fine. but anyways, the situations like that, right, where you can push to have more play in the game, right? Leave yourself in dire positions where you can push to having more outs. I'm going to play for the outs, right? You're like giving up, not casting your spells, not doing your thing, right? It's just not going to be successful over time, right? And you're going to miss opportunities that are on the table, right?
Yep.
Now, I'm not saying always cast your spells at every moment and respond to everything. That's not my point. My point
don't
is...
Don't be like that Najeela player, right?
Yeah, don't rile snake, for sure. But the point going into it is that if there's opportunities to play the game longer, you should try those, because you don't know what's going to happen. We just talked about how it's a variance-filled format. One thing I don't want to leave this conversation without is this other definition of irresponsible players, right? So sometimes irresponsible cannot be people playing suboptimally, cannot be people playing emotionally, but playing to their game plan, which is inherently independent of your own, right?
Right.
And that's something to think about entirely, right? So good examples of this would be like your opponent is on Dargo Ikra, right? They are in a situation in which they can shove into a Rhystic Study, or maybe Itali is actually a great example of this.
Yeah,
because I've had this situation come up a lot, right? When I've been piloting that deck, where I will be playing, I will know, okay, Kinnan's got 13 cards in their hand. I'm playing a Gruul deck. I'm not going to be able to survive their turn, right? Without a miracle, basically, right? And the other option is I can shove into this Rhystic Study and hope they don't have enough creature counters to stop me. Now, I'm making this choice as an informed choice, right? And in the same way, your opponents can also be making that choice as an informed choice. You looking at them being like, well, this is going to throw the game. It's like, well, no, they could also be pushing for their own win, right? Now, I've been on the other side of this where someone's like, well, I've got to shove for my window right now. When they don't, right? Like where they don't have to push at that time, where it's not like quasi deterministic that they're dead, right? Like where there's genuinely.
I mean, the example we brought up at the beginning of the episode, right? Where the player who you kind of like told them exactly how it was going to go down and it did exactly that. And it went that way because they decided this is when I'm going for it.
Right. Without listening to the pivot potential there. Right.
Right.
So. There is those situations where someone is playing to their game plan and it is directly antithetical to yours. And that's gonna happen, right? So at that time, understanding them from an empathetic point of view is gonna help too, right? So for example, this came up where I was Silicon Dynasty last year, player playing Rog Thrasios was like, well, I gotta jam the Isochron win right now, right? And I'm like, well, if you had waited, because you have Thrasios in the command zone, it's not like things don't get better for you. You do have opportunities for things to get better for you. And also, you've seen us with all this interaction in our hands. How did you think you were going to get through that, right?
Yeah.
That's the situation in which I go to empathize with their position. They think, well, my opponents are drawing a bunch of cards. Things don't get better. And it's like, well, no, I can play to that and say, like, you're a blue deck. You have Thrasios in the command zone. You can go longer, right? But it starts with me going, well, what's their understanding of this perspective? How do I put myself into that perspective?
Right? Not just inherently they are wrong, man, how dumb, right?
Yeah. Right, right. And I, and once again, this is like more a basics on psychology conversation than anything else.
Should but have
like
my wife on for this episode,
honestly, like, but that's this game, right? Like genuinely, yeah. One of my fascinations about psychology in general has been like, oh, hey, this is like part of my job now, which is like, having, you know, on a very, you know, basic level, right? We are not fixing people's deep inherent traumas, right? But like communicating effectively with individuals, which is hard for people in general, hard for neurodivergents, which are most magic players, right? And so like working with that and trying to empathize, trying to do your best to understand what can be nuanced and complicated emotions coming from people or understandings is like part of the game, right? Mm-hmm. You can still be a great CEDH player and not be able to psychologically analyze your opponents, right? You can be a great implementer of your combos and executioner of things, right? But that part of the game helps, right? Like I have a client who's a psychologist and he goes, yeah, that's the easiest part of my game because like I know how brains work.
I know how to talk to people. I do it for a living.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I feel bad. It's funny. This episode is a lot of you talking. And a lot of me going, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just like I'm like the choir behind the pastor right now. I'm just like, hallelujah.
Well, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it's something I've dealt with a lot, you know?
I think it's important to point out, right? Like you play in these events every weekend, right? Like,
I try, yeah.
This is what you do like every week, basically.
Right.
And I play Baldur's Gate. I think that's like a really good point, though. I think like being able to have those like social skills, like some of the like soft social skills, I think is like really important and helpful. I guess the big takeaway is like go to therapy.
I mean,
yes, like I mean, like just generally, yes, but
yeah, where's that BetterHelp sponsorship? Come on.
No, we want to be sponsored by an organization that like pays their therapists well.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Where's that nondescript mental health?
Where's that private practice? Cincinnati therapist, hit me up. I think this has been helpful, right? I think at least for me, like I've done a lot of absorbing of what you have talked about and I've like tried to contribute where I can, but you know, like, I think that is like a good way of talking about it though, is like, you're really trying to use those interpersonal skills that you would develop in a therapy session. And like, those are things where it's the ability to empathize and think about where people are coming from. And then like just talk. Right. Mm-hmm. And when I say talk, I'm not just like saying just run your mouth, but like to ask questions and think about it's what is it they do in therapy all the time? It's like I statements. Right. And it's like, if I do X, what do I get out of that? Right. You know? And so I think it's just like things like that, where obviously I'm pulling all of this like secondhand terminology I know from Cassidy out right now. But yeah, I think that's super important. But if people want to get some one-on-one time with you and get their CEDH therapy session, where can people find you, Ian?
Well, with that elegant phrasing aside, you're interested in.
I'm gonna start making. This is how we need to do it for your channel. I've got the perfect ad for your coaching. It's CEDH therapy. It's perfect.
Honestly, you're not wrong.
Yeah. Don't call it coaching. Yeah. It's therapy.
If you want any more specifics on some of the skills I've demonstrated today, as well as like any other aspects of CEDH, deck building, that kind of stuff, tackling metagames, all of that stuff, stuff I cover in CEDH coaching. You can find me over at comedianmtg@gmail.com, comedian_mtg over at Discord, or at comedianmtg on Twitter. DM me, any of those places. Super easy to find me. You can check out my other channel.
Give you a website where people can like just fill out a form.
yeah It's expensive and a pain in the butt to assemble, but yes, I have looked into it, I promise.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you can also find me on my other channel, youtube.com/@comedianmtg. Find me there. We do tournament breakdowns, tournament reports, all that stuff. Cal's my lovely editor, which is great, and they're very funny when they edit. Yeah, and any sort of stuff like that, definitely come find me. I think like there's so many great aspects of that. And I know like something that's been really helpful for folks lately is some people have actually brought me like footage. We've even been able to like review them playing games and stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah,
that's awesome.
Right. Like I was like, oh yeah, had you said something there, like at this point, you would have been able to completely dismantle this whole board state. And they're like, oh my God, I didn't think about stuff like that. Right. So like these things come up, you know what I mean? And they're really huge and had a lot of really cool stuff happen lately. I had one of my patrons or one of my coaching recipients reach out to me last weekend and was like, hey, you should cover this tournament. Also, I top forward in it, just saying, you know, which is really awesome. So definitely a number of them have been doing really well. I just lost to one of them in the crew battle yesterday. Scylla, wonderful player, definitely got good.
She has gone from so far in just like 6 months. Like, that is a huge progression for them.
It's been super cool to see too.
Come
check it out. Also, you know, there's so much more in this conversation about dealing with these sort of variables in the format, right? So, you know, keep that in mind.
Honestly, like I know I've said this, like I know people are sick and tired of the Survivor analogy, but honestly, just like watch Survivor and like pick up on how people talk. And it's like not the worst because you can see how CEDH games play out in it.
Yeah.
And it's just
my,
like,
my only qualm is like there is a lot more bold faced lying in Survivor once again, because it's imagine one single tournament where you could lie as much as you want. Right. Well, within reason, right? Because then you have to convince the people who are your allies later, blah, 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 blah. Point is, you know, it's a similar situation in that sense, right? So
mostly in how you have to like work with other people that you're eventually not going to be working with because you're individualized. That's the big thing.
One person wins the game, right? So you can be the best teammate in the entire world, but you got to win too, right?
Yeah. That's
a big part of it.
Yeah. 100%. Well, cool. Well, thanks for coming on to the podcast today, Ian.
You're welcome, co-host.
Yeah, I know. No, this episode really felt like I was doing an interview more than anything. But you know, this was good. Appreciate it. This episode sponsored by the Home Depot.
Oh my box. Yeah.
I've been staring at that logo all episode long.
Listen, we're still moving in. Okay. It's a process.
I had no shame. I have, you see my office. If you look in any direction for anywhere around my camera, it is chaos incarnate immediately. But thank you everybody for tuning in. If you want to support the podcast and hear more episodes like this, head on over to patreon.com/themindsculptors. If you want to continue to support the what did we call it, was the sculpty limes or the lime sculptors, head on over to the lime sculptors, the great lime scooter war of 2023 or 2024. You can head over there and support the podcast there.
Yeah, if you want to run Cal down the street, you can follow some of our previous instructions.
The lime scooter assassins are coming for us. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you next week. We've got the power rankings next week with a special guest coming on. It's been a long time, but excited to have him back. So we'll see you next week.